Intention. This is a big word for me. I have seen how having clear intentions has set the course of my life and dramatically changed the direction I was going in. Being very clear on what I desire is a very important practice for me. I have so many examples of how setting clear intentions has dramatically changed my life, but we'll only share a few. Early in my life, before I even understood what setting intentions was all about, I had a very clear intention that I wanted to be a flight attendant. I was, 16. I was written in my yearbook that I'd fly high as an airline stewardess, which is what it was called back then. Then life took over, and I became a wife and a fairly young mom. And that dream and intention was dormant for 40 years. However, it did become my reality at 56. I started working for WestJet as a flight attendant. I had a blast. Now I have lifetime flying, woohoo for me, and as my retirement benefit. So I can fly back and forth to see my kids in Ontario for, $40, even less than that. So it's a pretty cool benefit, and I'm benefiting that from the rest of my life. I have learned that I can't set a timeline on intentions, like goals, like we do with goals, like 3 months down the road we're going to have so-and-so. It has to happen on its own timing, and I just need to get out of the way and let it happen. Another intention was when I was ill. I was clear that no, I wasn't going to have an invasive surgery the doctors prescribed, and yes, I was going to heal this illness, and I did. It took 2 years, and it was a slow progress at times, but now that illness is just a very distant memory. And when I was moving to BC from Ontario, when I began my career as a flight attendant, I was planning to live in Vancouver. And I was flooded with comments like, oh, that's such an expensive place. You're never going to find affordable housing. So I don't hear you. I chose not to listen to the well-meaning advice of others and just set a clear intention that I would find a place that was reasonable and right for me. And I had a number in my head of how much I wanted to pay. And I did. I did find that. And I found a few homes that were perfectly in my budget. My last home in Vancouver was a gorgeous two-bedroom in-law suite with fireplace, a full yard for $750 a month. You won't get that now. That was a few years ago. But even now, in Victoria's challenging market, I found a beautiful home with everything included, even Netflix, at a very, very reasonable rate. So this did take time. I had to be patient. And Carrie had to put up with me for a little while as I was able to live with her for a while I was looking. But I waited, and synchronicity played a major role in my acquiring my ideal home. Is there an intention you would like to set? If there is, hold this close to your heart and let life conspire to make it happen. Sometimes it just means you have to get out of your own way.
Thank you, Cressa. As Cressa mentioned, we have been friends for quite a long time, and it was 11 years ago when she showed up at my church in Vancouver. And she was wearing her flight attendant uniform, so I knew immediately what it was that she did. And I always used to look forward to her coming breezing in because she had so much energy and she always had enthusiasm and just loved to talk and liked to do a happy dance when something good was going on. She's the only person I know who does a happy dance at the deli when the person behind the counter has exactly what it is that she wants. I always get a big laugh out of that. So I'd like to start with a story today because I like stories that illustrate my point. And I know I'm doing something different today by standing here, but I'm challenged by podiums. For some reason, I freeze when I'm behind them. So if you'll just put up with the change today, thank you for that. So there's a woman named Goody Cable. I swear that's her real name, Goody Cable. And she lives in Portland, Oregon. And more than 3 decades ago, she used to be walking every day to work. And she would pass this dilapidated old building. It used to be a hotel. And it was one of those buildings that really needed work and lots of tender, loving care had. Everything was boarded up. There were a few broken windows that hadn't been boarded. And as she kept walking by it day after day, she started to feel something pulling her in, something coming toward her sort of energetically. And after several weeks of this, she suddenly had the idea that she was going to buy that hotel. She had the intention she was going to do it. The only problem was she didn't have any money, none. And so she kept looking at it, thinking, what is it going to look like? How am I going to do this? She thought, well, I'm going to get the money. I have a friend who's an architect, and he's going to do the design. And I have other friends, a couple of friends who are interior designers, and they'll do the design work within. And I have lots of friends who can paint and do all sorts of other things. We'll just get the whole group together, and we're going to make this happen. And so then it was the matter of where the money was going to come from. And as she was thinking about this, she started to think about how the rooms would be designed. She loved to read. And so she decided that every room in the hotel was going to be named after a famous author and decorated in the style that that author would like. For example, the Ernest Hemingway room would be decorated the way that Hemingway would have it decorated, and F. Scott Fitzgerald and Gertrude Stein and so on. So she went to the bank all excited. She had all her notes in order. She knew approximately how much it was going to cost to do this, and she asked the banker for the loan, and the banker just looked at her as if she was totally out of her mind. And he said, I can't give you that money. You have nothing for collateral. You don't have any money of your own. You don't have anybody who's going to support you with this. Yes, you may have people who will come and work with you and work for you, but this just doesn't work. And so she thanked him for his time. She went out. She went to another bank. And another one. And another one. And another one. She went to 29 banks or financial institutions. And at the 29th one, the banker looked at her and said, I believe in you. And I believe in your idea, and I am going to loan you money based upon your idea. Based upon this intention you have, I believe that you're going to do this. And so he worked out the loan for her. She got her friends together, and they refurbished the hotel. They rebuilt what needed to be rebuilt, and they opened the hotel. And this is now more than 3 decades ago, and it has never had an empty space in it. It has been full from the time that it opened. And what she wanted to do was to give writers a space to go where they could sit and finish their manuscripts, or where they could work on them for a while and just be in a peaceful place with people of like mind. And when everything was finished, all of those people who had worked on it were invited to come and spend a week and to have a celebratory party and just hang out together and relax and look at the work that they had accomplished. And every year at Christmas, they're invited back for 1 week, and they all get together to celebrate again. And I love this story. And she has since gone on. I heard recently she has opened a coffee shop in Portland called Rimsky-Korsakov, because she decided she'd better get some music in there somewhere with the writers. And the thing that really appealed to me about this was thinking about this woman and how she had such confidence and such belief in herself, such belief in her ability to do this, so much so that she would go to 29 different bankers and financial institutions and had the courage to ask them for the money. Because that's a really big thing when you consider it. And so I started wondering what her story might have been, what her story from childhood that would lead her to be this kind of person, because each of us has a story. And that story begins when we're born. And when we're just little tiny babies, when we're infants, the first chapter is written by our parents, by the way that they treat us, by the way they love us, or by the way we may feel unloved. And then other people add to the chapters, our siblings, our friends as we're growing up, our teachers, people we work with. And pretty soon we have this great big story, and sometimes it's a big drama. But it's whatever we have created about ourselves from what we've been taught. And it's not our faults if we're saying, well, I could never do what Goody did. Because perhaps we've been taught that we couldn't. That perhaps our dreams were too big. Perhaps we weren't enough. Perhaps we weren't smart enough. Perhaps we weren't educated enough. Perhaps we weren't ambitious enough. All of the enoughs that we may have been taught that we don't have within us. Or else we may have had wonderful, loving parents and loving family and friends where we grew up just feeling completely loved all the time and feeling that we could do anything, absolutely anything. And so everything that we do, every decision that we make in our lives, the way we respond to everything, comes from that story, comes through that filter. And that's why some people feel that they can do anything in the world, and others feel that it's just too hard. You know, I'm not capable, whatever. And the thing is that it is never too late to change that. You know, I was thinking about one of my granddaughters the other day when she was very young. She was taking ballet, and she was very good. She lived in Zurich, and she auditioned for the Zurich Ballet when she was 7. And she was accepted, and then they brought in a doctor to examine the girls and the boys. And she was told that she had bad feet and that her hips weren't pliable enough to be a wonderful ballerina. And so I said to her, well, Dame Margot Fontaine had bad feet, and she didn't do too badly, so, you know, don't always have to give up. And she said, dance is so important to me, I'm just going to keep on dancing. And one day I asked her what she would do if she couldn't be a ballerina, a professional ballerina. And she was still 7. And she said, oh, then I'll be an astronaut. And I laughed and I thought, isn't that wonderful? Isn't it wonderful that there are children who grow up who believe that everything is possible? Now, she's not studying to be an astronaut. She's in university. She's in film school, actually, in Toronto, and going into her third year of film school and is doing documentary films. But she never, ever stopped thinking that she might not be able to do something. And this is something that we need to reawaken in ourselves. And as we do, what we have to understand is that everything is energy. That our thoughts create form. It's a complicated thing to get our heads around. It's an ancient teaching, which is now new thought. But the thing is, since the 1990s in particular, there have been many books written about this by quantum physicists. Because quantum physics has proven that our thoughts create form. Harvard has done hundreds of thousands of studies where they have taken people to look at, into, I don't know how big the microscope has to be, but very, very powerful. So they're looking at quantum particles or waves. And the interesting thing is that if I were looking at it and if I thought it was a particle, it would be a particle. If I thought it was a wave, it would be a wave, because that's the way that it works. And what Harvard did was they asked people to look at these particles or waves, as they might be, and to think a thought of some kind, impress a thought upon it, to see what would happen. And then they recorded the information. And what happened in every single case is that these particles or waves began to take the form of what the person was thinking. Now think about that. We have between 60 and 80,000 thoughts a day. I have no idea who counts them. 60 to 80,000 thoughts a day. That is 2,500 to 3,300 thoughts per hour. Now most of those thoughts don't mean anything. You know, they're just kind of random, quick things that we're going through. You know, you're going down the highway, you see a tree that you like, pretty tree. Oh, there's a red car. You know, I think that's my friend ahead of me, actually. Oh, I better stay on the road here. You know, I mean, there's just this constant stuff that's going on in our minds. And so there isn't time for any of those things to start creating form. The things that are creating form and the things that have created form are what we were taught from the time we were very young and what other people helped us with along the way, good or bad. And so we carry those things with us and we keep reinforcing them. Psychologists now say that 50% of our belief systems are formed by the time we are 2 years old. I mean, a 2-year-old has no ability to discern what is being said to them, good or bad or indifferent. By the time, and it goes on at various ages, but by the time we are 18 years old, 90% of our belief systems have been formed. That only leaves us 10% to play with. And that's not very much when you think about that. And even at 19, we haven't had enough life experience. I know I hadn't had enough life experience to really make good decisions with everything that I was doing. The good news is that we get to change this any moment. Right here, right now, in this moment, if you don't like the way your life looks, you can start making changes right in this moment by thinking different thoughts. And thinking positive thoughts. And let me give you an example. We're creating all the time. Whether we know it or not, we're creating. The thoughts that are predominant in our minds that we focus upon are expanding and are starting to take form. And that's the good news and that's the bad news. Bad news, let me give you an example. I have a friend who's a minister. Her name is Carol Carnes and she's in the U.S. Carol has a friend who bought a red Mercedes convertible with white pearl leather interior. She had wanted one ever since Carol could remember. That's all her friend talked about. That is the car I want. And she finally bought one. And Carol said that whenever she was with her friend, wherever they went, her friend would park as far away as possible from any other cars. Because she was afraid that somebody was going to put a ding in it. Somebody might scratch the door in a parking lot. And that car was so precious to her. And she just lived in fear of something happening to it. And so one day, they were at a supermarket. And as usual, her friend went right down to the end of the parking lot where there were no cars. And pulled in and parked so that nothing could hit it. They went in and did their shopping. They came out. There was a mom with a little toddler. Her shopping cart was filled to the brim with groceries, and all of a sudden the little one let go of his mom's hand and ran out, and there were cars. The mom let go of the cart, went and grabbed her child, and the cart started weaving its way down through the parking lot. It was going just like this, zigzagging through, never hit a car, all the way through, down into the corner where the little red Mercedes was parked. It didn't hit the Mercedes. It hit the post next to it, and a huge jar of red tomato sauce flipped up, went down, hit the gear shift, smashed, and glass and red tomato sauce went all over the pearly white interior. And Carol's friend said, "I always knew that would happen." And Carol, who teaches what I teach, said, "Look how powerful you are." You know, it's again, if we have deep-seated fears about things, we're going to be attracting more of those things to us that we're going to be worried about, that we're going to be afraid of. And so isn't it better for us to think about something that we'd love to do, something that, and to think positive thoughts? And I was thinking about this, you know, let's say you wanted the little red Mercedes with the white pearl interior. And so what you do is you create an image of it in your mind. I call it a mental equivalent. It's a picture of that car. And you imagine what it'd be like to be in that car, and you're driving down the highway, and you've got music playing, and you're singing, and you're just having a really good time, and it's the most wonderful car. And Cressa can tell you all about it, because she doesn't have the red convertible, but she's got her little yellow car called Joy, and she does that. First time I was out with her, it was like being with a 16-year-old, because she was rocking it as we were going down the highway. Anyway, imagine yourself being in that car and what it feels like. And you're driving down the highway, and it's just beautiful, and you're just loving this car. And you know that new car smell. You know, you can imagine what that is. And so you put all of those pieces together. You use all of your senses and you hold on to them. And you're starting to create that in the invisible. You know it's invisible because it's not sitting there in front of you right now. But in the invisible, it's there. And you don't know how it's going to happen. You know, as Cressa said when she set her intention, she didn't know what the timing was going to be. She didn't know when, but she just knew that it was going to happen. And so you've set the intention. You've created this mental image. Now, the thing is, when you get up in the morning, you don't look out your window at the old blue Chevy out there and say, oh, it hasn't arrived yet. Because as soon as you do something like that, you're negating everything that you've done. Your little red Mercedes just went off into the distance somewhere else. What we have to do when we look out and the little blue Chevy is still there is just say, you know, my car is still coming. It's on its way. And when you see one on the highway, say, I'm having one of those. I'm ordering one of those up. When you see something you like anywhere, instead of, oh, I don't have it. You know, poor me. I'll probably never have that. I'll never have enough money. I'll never have enough whatever to have it. Instead, I'll have some of that. I'll order it up. You know, we have to be specific about what it is that we want in our lives. And then we have to focus upon it. And the best way I find to focus upon anything is to go into meditation and to just imagine all of those things the way that I would want them to be. What it would feel like, what it would taste like, what it would smell like. You know, just, and to feel it, to absolutely feel it. You know, I hear people talking about how they would like to have more prosperous lives. You know, and they can get themselves into that feeling. They can imagine themselves on that cruise to Hawaii or, you know, whatever it is they would do with lots of money. And then they're really feeling it. They're really into it. And then they go to the mailbox and pick up their bills and they stand there and immediately all of that feeling of prosperity is gone. This takes work. It takes imagination. It takes commitment. It takes setting the intention of what we want our lives to look like. And it's not all about stuff. I'm talking about stuff here. I've been talking about cars and I'm talking about prosperity. That's not what it's about. And in fact, when The Secret came out a few years ago, I was offended by it because it was all about accumulating stuff. And that's, to me, that's not what life is about. It's about having a rich inner life. It's about knowing that you're making a difference in the world. It's about looking at what it is that is yours to do. What is mine to do? And sometimes we may feel helpless. You know, we may look out there and say, oh, there are so many problems. It is so big. And I remember the words of the German philosopher Goethe. And he said, I am only one, but still I am one. I cannot do everything, but I can do something. And so what is the something that we can do? You know, it's not that we're all born to do huge things in our lives. We are all born with greatness within us. But that greatness within might mean you're going to be a great cook, a great mom, a great homemaker, a great husband, a great mechanic, a great, you know, fill in the blank. Or it might mean you're going to be the Prime Minister of Canada. Or it might mean that you're going to, you know, be a holy person on a mountain somewhere. I mean, that we have that inner calling. There's something in us that is there that is, that when it is fulfilled, we feel it. We feel our lives are worthwhile and we are content with it. And so how is it we want our lives to feel? How much love do we have within us to give to others? You know, to give to our neighbors, to give to our families, to give to one another here in this community. You know that when you're in community like this, that it is a loving community. And you know that you're experiencing this within, this power, this wonderful, wonderful feeling, and how happy you are to see one another when you come in on a Sunday morning, how great it is. You know, you're not sitting around all week thinking about, oh boy, I'm going to go on Sunday and I'm just going to be really miserable. That's not it. That's not why you're here. You're here because it feels good to be here. You're here because you get inspired by others when you're here. And so let us know that as we carry these things in our hearts, and as we create what it would look like in our minds for us to be those happy, loving people, let us know that we're sending out a vibration to everybody else. And that vibration is magnetic. Everything has a vibration. Everything is energy. You know, this table is energy. If you take it down to the teeny tiniest level, everything is the same. Edgar Mitchell, the astronaut, when he was coming back from the moon, had a transcendental moment where he said he looked down and his hands were molecules and the spacecraft was molecules. Everything was molecular, and he looked out at the stars and they were molecular, and he said it was at that moment he realized that everything is made of the same stuff. We're all made out of stardust. I heard a professor from the University of Chicago being interviewed on CBC Radio one morning, and he said, we're all made out of stardust. We're all made out of the same stuff. We just vibrate to a different energy than that table does. Just as, you know, the air is invisible, but it is energy. Everything is energy. And so let's be conscious of our energy. Let us be conscious of what it's like. Edgar Mitchell came back to the earth and founded the Institute for Noetic Sciences, where he set about to prove all of these things, did magnificent experiments before his death, and it still exists. And how many of you have heard of Lynn McTaggart, who wrote a book called The Field? Yes, and more recently, The Power of Eight. She's done remarkable work with groups who are not meeting together, but who simply get her emails and send good energy to people who are sick, and those people are healing. Now it takes two. It takes the person who wants healing at the other end, and it takes the person who's sending the good intention to them. And I could go on for hours and hours because, you know, I was saying to Cressa, I spent the first five pages I was writing trying to explain what it is that I believe and teach, and then I gave that up because I thought that's not going to go anywhere. So I'm just kind of touching on things here, but what you need to know is that there is a power for good in the universe, and you can use it. You can use it every moment. You're using it anyway without knowing it. So we can consciously use it. And the universe is absolutely crazy about you. It doesn't know to say anything but yes. That power says yes to everything you desire, as long as you keep focused upon what it is you want. And it will also say yes to things you don't want, if that's what you're focused upon. So let's remember that today. And let's practice that when we go into the silence. Let's see how we want our lives to look, how we want this country to look, how we want our political leaders to look, how we want leaders everywhere to look, without condemning anyone anywhere. Simply what our greatest dream would be for our lives, for our country, for our planet. And I want to, again, just go over this by Martin Luther King. And I ask you to repeat the line after me. I have a dream, and I will think, speak, and act until my dreams come true. I am somebody, and I have a purpose. Large or small, I will do something to help others every day. I am the dream. And the dream is now. And so it is. And bless you all. And we have some music here that we're going to just work.